Okay, so what's happening with Brown Slammers? This is a default on front screen, and I'm just going to third screen. So across the country, we've been monitoring birds pretty extensively since the 50s. And this paper came out in the Journal of Science in 2019 that tried to assess based on reading bird survey, because of bird panels and a couple of data sources, what's been going on with birds. You know, we know for specific species what the trends are, but what's going on in this country. So they found this out of the US, we've lost about 3 million birds since 1970. And there's a lot of nuance in there, you know, like waterfowl increased. This includes changes in invasive species like starlings, but overall, birds. And as long as I'm talking about grassland birds, they've actually experienced some of the greatest declines of any group of birds. So the only group of birds that's doing worse are Hawaiian birds. Those birds basically don't have a chance. But grassland birds still do have a chance. So a lot of this decline is due to habitat loss. If you think about the Great Plains in the US, you know, the state of Iowa used to be grass. So that's, you know, we know where all these birds are coming from. But overall, we've seen about a 53% loss in grassland birds since 1970, and some birds have seen larger decreases. So here they say 3 out of 4 meadowlarks have been lost. Meadowlarks are actually less species, and they're probably the invasive species we're interested in. So in multiple species, the Nature Conservancy and a lot of the other bird conservation groups are specifically interested in are these six species. So Sprague's pipit, thick-billed longspur, brewer sparrow, sage thrasher, barred sparrow, and chipmunk longspur. So the two in the middle, brewer sparrow and sage thrashers, are called sagebrush owls. So you only find them in like blocks of sagebrush. Although brewer sparrows do extend into Canada and we've got little slivers of silver sagebrush habitat, but generally just need a full sagebrush. Sage thrashers are super uncommon. When we do monitoring them, we see like 3 of them a year. They need like large expanses of sagebrush. I think I've only heard one once in Philippines, so that's called for the and then the other four are grassland obligates. So they need large tracts of grasslands, like hundreds of thousands of acres generally, and they show a preference for native habitat, although they will use crested bluegrass. And so there are a number of other grassland bird species, but we're particularly interested in these, in part because of their habitat needs, and also because they only breed in our plains. So they spend their winters in the southern U.S. and Mexico, but then they come up here, and they're mostly spending time in Alberta and Saskatchewan, the area around like Brooks, Alberta, Cypress Hill, the Grass Consumption Park, and then in central Montana. And some of these birds you see do have some of their populations in North Dakota, but North Dakota's several years seen a lot of crowding and also a lot of fragmentation due to gas. So their populations being hurt for the U.S. for these four. And as I mentioned before, you know, some of these birds have been seeing really steep declines. And so things like thick-billed longspur, which they changed the name to Lesser-billed longspur, have seen declines over 90% since they started counting. And so that's like kind of a continental scale. There's something called Great Survey, you know, a couple of weeks every year. You go out and drive 25 miles and stop 3 miles. All you're seeing. So when you see these like long-term trends, that's the data source for that. And because there is a particular interesting direction experience in the last 10 or so years, they've been roots in grassland areas. So we have some neighbors that were monitoring. And so 3 of these 4 species are listed in Canada and, you know, generally, which is why we're concerned about them. So Overall, these species are adapted to large landscapes, and they've evolved over time to deal with grazing disturbance, disturbance from fire. They can handle drought and insect disturbance as well. So one of the ways these species adapt is by being able to move around the landscape. So they, you know, if you think about sage grouse, they are going to the same land every year. They're really specific place. Because grasslands are constantly in flux, one area gets rained and another doesn't, there's a fire, they will sometimes come back to the same place, but if they get conditions aren't right, they'll move somewhere else. So that gives them the kind of flexibility. If they have a large amount of landscape, they'll be okay. So one of the things that Fish and Wildlife Service, the Nature Conservancy have been interested in is looking at, you know, okay, we know we have a lot of grass here, they seem to be doing fairly well in this specific geography. Are there ways to manage for them, or are we, you know, doing things that are negatively or positively affecting them, depending on the smaller scale? Like once you've got the habitat, then what? So in 2016, Marissa Sather, head of her Smith Fish Wildlife, came up with this targeted local monitoring survey effort. So I mentioned the breeding bird survey reefs. You know, those are great to get kind of like a big picture, but they're really spread out. And since they're just going along roads, sometimes you're getting disturbed areas or you're not getting like the best content. So this survey effort is targeted and after specifically putting them where we have the most stress. So sometimes it means, you know, places we're not just driving. And we're doing them in these three geographies, the northern mountain grasslands, just north of the Mount Griffin, and glaciated plains, south of the Mount Griffin, and then the muscle shell plains, south of the river. So the muscle shell plains is definitely more sagebrush dominated, but those species do show up there just in smaller numbers generally. And then we're specifically looking at where National Wildlife Service, Rancher Stewardship Alliance, all these groups are doing projects. Are there trends? You know, we put in a grazing system, we see a change. We do a grass seeding, we see a change. So trying to capture what's the trend in the opinion, but then also when we do these projects for birds, what's it? And there's a lot of nuance. So we haven't analyzed the results from 2023 yet. This is from the 2 report. But one of the things we saw in our, so in this column, this is our areas that are controlled. So it's just like areas of native grass that there is no, there's, you know, just normal grazing going on. And so in those sites overall, sprague pipits and barred sparrows saw declines over the past 6 years. That is likely capturing influence due to drought. So those two species like taller grass. And so, I mean, there were just like, when I would go out the last, or 2022 and 2021, there were just way less of them because we didn't have grass and litter to the extent that they needed. So that's why we need these long-term data sets. You know, this is fiber. So what other studies have found is that over time, you know, some species go down during drought and come back up in wet years, and then vice versa, the species that have shorter grass, they'll go down in wet years and come back up. So it takes a little while to parse them. One thing that I love to is brewer sparrows, which are sagebrush obligates, actually increased over that term. But so it seems like they're probably not as tied to drought because they're keying in on sagebrush cover, which doesn't really change. You know, it's the grass cover that's changing on drought. And then the thick-billed longspurs saw a decrease. They're the species I'm personally most concerned about because they've shown the biggest declines. And they maybe, although I don't know, maybe you can talk about this a bit later, but they may be showing some maladaptive behavior because they'll sometimes nest in fields. So there's just, they're more complicated species. So one thing that I thought was crucial also was that where we had grassland restorations, right, we had an overall decline in bird sparrows across the landscape, but where we did a grass seeding, we had an increase in them. So that was like maybe mitigating the effect of drought. And then where we put in grass seedings, which I think we're all good, the two species, the two wild birds, the like shorter grass, kind of fell out of those seedings. So the first couple of years you go there, you don't get to grass yet, those birds would be there. As the grass got thicker, they leave those seedings. So it's with all the grassland birds, because they have different habitat needs, it's hard to say, like, you know, this is the one thing to do, especially with grazing. So with grazing system enhancements, we're not capturing their, like, is it a change in season of use? Is it a change in AUMs, anything like that? So it's kind of hard to parse them out there. But where we have one of the big pushes that RSA has been doing grazing infrastructure on expired CRP. So making it, you know, putting in fresh water. So that's something that hasn't been grazed in 20 years, could be grazed. And so thick-billed long spurs, which again, like shorter grass, saw a big increase, this 24%, where we added grazing to a site that hadn't been grazed in a long time. So that's cool. But lots of nuance. And so when we do these bird surveys, we're mostly doing them by ear, and we're trying to increase our statistical power to, you know, be able to say something more conclusively about this by using automatic measures. And so that's a big thing that Sarah is working on. So, you know, one of our limiting factors to do surveys right is that you need someone to go out early in the morning. There's only about 30 days that you can do the surveys, and you need a certain number of skills to do it. So by using automatic measures, anybody can go put those out, and then we enter, analyze that, and there's actually computer programs that can pick up bird songs and say, you know, there was this bird there. So we're hoping to be able to increase the amount of surveys we're doing in the statistical pattern. So this next, I think this will play, this is just a sagebrusher singing. So if you guys are at the sagebrush, you can listen for them. So this is just really if you guys want to hear this better, we'll play it for you. Just wanted to share, like, you know, they're here, but, you know, I listen to this recording and pick out this is what's singing, and basically we can train computer programs to do that too, and we can, Sarah's working with a scientist out of Fort Collins, where you can train the program to have a certain level of confidence that that's what it's picking up on, so. And then Molly had asked me to mention grasshoppers. It's been a big grasshopper here in the West. So grasshoppers are really a key food for species, and not just the sparrows. So, you know, all the sparrows are eating grasshoppers, but support shrikes, kestrels, swains, and sawks, like from the smallest bird to the biggest bird, they're all eating grasshoppers, especially in a year when they're plentiful, they're very high in protein. And even sage grouse and sharp tailed grouse, they're more eating plants, but especially when their chicks are young, they need that protein source of grass. And there's been some studies trying to look at, you know, if you exclude birds from an area, are you gonna have more grasshoppers? And I went down like a real internet rabbit hole. There's a lot of mixed results, you know, like some years yes, some years no. But it seems like overall birds probably are having an impact that where they did these exclosures, you would have up to a 30% decrease in grasshoppers and plots that birds could access. But again, that was pretty variable based on year and stuff. And then it also seemed that birds were selecting for larger grasshoppers. And so in plots where they then went and surveyed, there would be smaller grasshoppers in those plots that had been predated. So, yeah, that's all I know about birds and grasshoppers, but they're super important food source, and they can have an impact, but on a year where we have so many grasshoppers, they're probably not, like, having an impact. And then, you know, your grasshoppers, what can we do? The biggest thing is maintaining that habitat so that, you know, they have somewhere to escape to go depending on the conditions. And so for conservation groups, to me, that means supporting fishers and branch ecologies so that persists. Monitoring and research, if you want to help with bird surveys, or, you know, I do trainings every year and can teach you how to help some birds. Or if you have a property that you want bird surveys done, let us know. And then there's two programs, and there's a lot of conservation programs out there, but I run a candidate conservation training assurance program that does management plans for these birds. And then Audubon also has a conservation ranching program that's focused on managing for grass and birds. So that's one.
Well, I would just comment that I downloaded the Merlin app to my phone, and I've just been amazed at the birds I have in my neighborhood, you know, when I record those sounds. Really, I have a red-headed woodpecker around here. Yeah, I do.
Awesome. And we'll just caution, like, double-check. If it says some super rare bird, sometimes it gets things wrong, so just, like, double-check. It's something.
What to do? Listen to it?
Well, yeah, you put it on your phone and you set it in the window of the kitchen and record for a while, and it tells you the bird species.
And then you can click on it and it'll bring you to the exact spot, and you know, so you can hear what it was. And then you can go back, they have a whole database, so you can compare it.
Bird. Oh.
Yeah. It is a Yeah.
Any more questions for Ellen?
Right, thanks.
Yeah, sorry. You mentioned North Dakota. I was just curious about what situation is going on in Canada.
I mean, I think they've been experiencing, Canada's very similar to here, similar declines, similar threats, you know, habitat loss. Sometimes, like, when, you know, I was talking about habitat differences, like they could show up here and it's too dry, they can go there. So it does seem like sometimes, like, we're in a drought and vice versa. Like, we've had a pretty wet year with stuff in Canada. It was quite a bit hard, you know? But there's definitely a lot of interest there, especially because in Canada, that's the northern edge of the range for most of these species. So it seems like there's more interest. But like I mentioned, there are three of these species that are listed. Their Endangered Species Act is different, though, where it really only applies on federal lands, where it's like pretty wishy-washy on the other lands. So there's a lot of interest in after their same gender declines. Yeah, I did my master's in campus.
What are you been out in, obviously, this summer? What are thoughts? Do you feel like it's been good year? And just being on it feels like being warm, but
It seemed like the sprigs, pipits, and barred sparrows, which are the ones that like for grass, are kind of coming back, but they're not. Like, I think there's a little bit of lag time when there's a drought for their populations to come back, and especially early in the spring, because they're showing up in April, you know, like the grass hadn't really started growing, so it's still places where it looked pretty droughty, where now there's grass, so it seemed like there's a bit of a lag. And then, you know, chestnut covered longspurs kind of everywhere, they do like shorter grass, the thick-filled longspurs, there were places where I saw more of them last year, but overall, there are places where I'd go to for a couple of years and they'd always be there, and now they're not. So, and I think there's more, but yeah, it did seem like things were starting to happen.
So, like APHIS has been doing a ton of big sprays. They kill all these grass birds, birds come in and eat up dead, like do the poison transfer. Is it bad for them?
So, yeah, maybe someone else could talk about it. I found two papers that found very little impact of spraying on birds. And I think when they approve chemicals, they have to do testing. You know, it was like super low toxicity stuff. So as far as I know, that's not a big issue.